Good morning. Welcome back to Nachyami. Today we're going to be focusing on Amos Perek Zayin, the seventh chapter of Sefer Amos. And this is really a fascinating Perek. It is one which includes the only narrative in the book of Amos, which means it's the only story section in Amos. Sometimes it's a little easier to learn the story sections of Tanakh. In the Nevi'im Achronim, the narratives are far and fewer in between. We have one of them here, and the only one in the book of Amos itself. So let's start. The first part, half of the Perek, deals with three visions that Amos is seeing. In fact, the last three prakim, Zayin, Ches, and Tes, which is where we are right now, are visions that Amos has, which have certain metaphoric ideas behind them, or are examples of certain ideas which are about to be unfolding. So the first part of this perek is three visions. The first is he is shown by Hashem, Yotzer Govai Bitchilas Alois HaLekesh. So he sees a Govai, which is arising at the time of the Lekesh. What is a Govai? And the Mepharshim say it's locust. It's one of the names for a locust. And the Barbanel points out that it has the additional meaning of being a creditor. So it means to say this is a creditor taking back the credit or the money which was given to them because they are misusing it. So Hashem says he's going to bring this locust plague on all of Israel, the northern kingdom, and is going to finish all the grass and what Amos and all the vegetation. Amos in response says, "Va'amar Hashem Elokim slachna miyakum Yaakov ki katanu. Please have mercy on them. Don't let them be fully destroyed." And Hashem responds, "Nicham Hashem al zois laisier. It won't be itself." He prays on their behalf. In the second vision, we have a vision of fire. Hashem talks about. He says, "Gine kore loriv bo'esh Hashem Elokim," and this fire is going to consume the fields and the area of Israel. And again, Amos intercedes. He prays on them and says, Yaakov, this nation is so small, please don't consume it. And Hashem responds, I'm not going to consume it in the same way. And finally, the third vision is where Hashem is seen in a vision in Amos's prophecy as Nitzav al Chomas Anoch Uviado Anach. He's standing on a wall, and in his hand he has a measuring weight. Measuring weights are used to get the exact gravity and the line in which the bricks should be laid. So Hashem, so to speak, is standing on this wall, and he is holding this weight used for construction. And he turns in this case and says, Mo'ata ro'e Amos, what do you see? Which is one type of prophecy we're going to see a lot more in Zechariah later on, where the prophet is asked what he sees, and he responds that he sees this Anoch, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, yes, I'm going to judge Israel with this anach, like a measuring stick or measuring rod. I'm going to use it in a way that's going to bring exact judgment. V'noshamu b'mos Yitzchak, and I'm going to remove, or I'm going to make desolate the altars of Yitzchak, which is a sort of Yitzchak with a sin as opposed to a tzadi. V'mikdoshei Yisrael yecheravu, and the places of service in Israel will be destroyed. V'kamti al beis Yerovam acherev, and I'm going to attack the house of Yerovam, who's the king there, with swords. So these are the first three visions. Just a few perspectives over here. Rabbi Benel points out that Hashem at this point in time is telling them that he's going to send affliction against them, not exile. So if you're looking at these visions, none of these visions of punishment talk about Israel being taken away from the land. We hear about locusts, we hear about heat of sorts, or fire of sorts, and we hear about this Chomas Anach. But they are actually going to be judgment, which is being affected in the land of Israel. This is before Golus is predicted. This is important. This is a much easier, or perhaps less painful, and shorter version of punishment and exacting judgment. What is the fire in vision 2? So the fire in vision 2 is, according to Radak, is a heat wave, which will dry up all the crops. They won't have any food, so it's another alternative for no food, like vision 1 of the locusts. While Rabbi Benel says it's pestilence and disease, which will consume the livestock of the nation of Israel. It is interesting that the first two visions differ from the last vision, in the sense that the first two are pretty clear. He hasn't asked what he's seeing. He sees what it is, and he prays and intercedes. In the third vision, he is asked what he sees, and then the vision is clarified, and then he doesn't even pray on their behalf. So what's going on in this third vision? So it seems a little ambiguous. And the Mepharshim point out that, you know, on the one hand, Hashem is on a wall, and a wall is a protection agent, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is protecting Israel. But at the same time, there's this measuring weight, which indicates a meticulous judgment, which is, in a certain sense, going to hurt them. And that's exactly the ambiguity over here. Ambiguity, as Ibn Ezra points out, Rabbi Nel pointed out, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm protecting you, but I'm also judging you. There is a responsibility which comes with the protection I afford you. If you're not going to live up to that, I'm going to have to judge you. So that's why the actual message is ambiguous, perhaps, which is why the vision itself is ambiguous. Why did he not intercede in this case? Rabbi Nel points out, very simply, because Hashem says, in this case, I'm using judgment. And in the end of Pasuk Ches, he says, Lo yosif oid avorlo. I'm not going to go past this. I'm not going to go so far. When it came to the, let's say, the pestilence or the locusts, that could consume them fully. So he says, no, please, Hashem, hold off. Don't destroy them completely. So in this case, it's because it's done by exact judgment, he's not concerned about that, therefore does not feel the need to intercede. One little interesting thing, just before going further to the last section of this parak, is that they are called the altars of Yitzchak, with a sin as opposed to a tzadi. This happens sometimes in Tanakh. The Babanel suggests that, or the Radak in this case suggests, that the reason Yitzchak is being brought over here is because Yitzchak was the forefather, he was the patriarch who sacrificed his own life for the sake of Hashem, and he is being contrasted to the generation which lives now, where although he was a Yitzchak, he had a tzadi, he had a tzadik, he had some sort of righteousness in his name. They, on the other hand, are sacrificing themselves for other causes. They were trying to bring up the schus of Yitzchak, but at the same time, they're certainly not made of the same cloth as Yitzchak in this respect, which is sort of this ambiguous merit which is being marshaled here. The last part of this perek is, in fact, this episode that occurs. This is the narrative. It's from Pasuk Yud to Yud Zayin, this is the end of the perek. So up gets a fellow called Amatzia. He's the Kohen in Beis El. Remember, Beis El was one. He was of the shrines of the northern kingdom, because when Yerovam ben Nevat, the original king of the north, who split off the northern kingdom, created the kingdom of Israel, he realized that if they were to continue to go on pilgrimages down south to the Beis HaMikdash, he would lose his power. So he created his own temples, his own places to serve, with an Egel Zahav in the south in Beis El and one in Dan. So the person who's in charge of the temple in Beis El is a person called Amatzia. Amatzia, in fact, is a well-used name in Nach, but this person is Amatzia HaKohen. He's the priest of this shrine. So what does he do? He goes off and runs off to Yeravam ben Yoash, who's the king right now, and he says, Ha, Amos is planning a rebellion against you. He says we're going to be exiled, and he says that you're going to be killed, Yeravam. Go do something about it. Then there's a silence, and then Amatzia comes up to Amos and he says, go flee southwards. Go eat your bread there and prophesize down south. So you see two interactions. First he goes and tells the king, and then he goes and speaks to Amos directly, telling him to run away. Amos' answer to these two attacks is, I'm not a prophet. I'm not a son of a prophet. I'm simply a shepherd. Hashem took me from behind, from being a shepherd. And he told me to deliver these messages. That's what I'm doing. And therefore he turns to him. He says, Amatzia, you should know. And in the last pasuk, Ishtocha be'ir tizneh, your wife will adulterate in your own city. Vonecho v'nosecho b'cher v'yipalu, and your children will be killed by the sword. V'admoscho b'chevel yichetel t'chulak, and your portion will be divided up by others, and you will be exiled from your land. And that's the end of the parak. It's a very, very intense interaction over here. What is going on? So first of all, who is this Amatzia? By the fact that he is the priest of the shrine at Beis El, we can understand his interest. If Amos is talking about repairing your ways and moving away from Avodah Zarah, well, that means to say that the membership at the local shrine is going to diminish, which means to say the interest of Amatzia is personal over here. He knows that his worshippers are going to diminish if people are going to be listening to Amos. So he's been searching for a pretext to get Amos off the scene. He finds it. Why? Because the last of the prophecies, the last of the visions that he has in this perek is about how Hashem talks about he's going to go against the house of Yerovam Bacherev with swords. So this was his pretext. He finds it. He goes straight to the king in his first option and he says, King, he is trying to kill you. Did Amos really say that Yerovam is going to die? No. In fact, Yerovam dies peacefully. His son is going to be the one who dies. This prophecy is simply saying there are going to be incessant raids of the enemy, but there's not going to be goddess. He doesn't talk about exile from the land in the prophecy. He doesn't talk about the death of Yerovam. He just talks about attacks. But what Amatzia is doing is, like in any good rumor, you need to make it bigger to make it more exciting and sensational, and that's what he does. It's interesting that nothing happens from that. We don't see Yerovam ben Yoash's response to this. There's a silence, and then Amatzia attacks Amos personally. So what happens? The Gemara in Psachim on Daf Pei Zayin Amu Beis tells us that he didn't believe. He didn't believe Amatzia. He said that Amos is a tzaddik. He wouldn't say something like that. Or even if he did say something like that, it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he's not going to fight it. So Yerovam displays some great tzidkus at this point in time. And by the way, Yerovam is seen in a great, in a good light, even though he's a bad king in many ways. He's seen in a good light for a number of things. One of them is expanding the borders of Israel. And another one of them is this, is that he does not take action against Amos the prophet. What's this whole business in the personal attack about going and eating bread? Like, meaning, go down south and you'll eat bread. What's that got to do with anything? Why is Amatzia telling that? So Baba Nel points out, well, there's a famine right now. Amos has been talking about a famine in the land, so there's a famine now. So what he's trying to do is he's using a little bit of a carrot and a stick. He says, get out of here, your life is at stake, because the king's going to kill you. And also, there's a carrot, there's bread down south. Why don't you go down there, you'll have a better lifestyle. The Radak says it's more insidious than that. The Nevi'ei Sheker, the people who are false prophets in those days, their parnosa would be gotten from giving prophecy. So they would say what the people wanted to say, and people would pay their money, they would pay their honorariums. So what is Amatzia really saying to Amos? He's saying, Amos, you need parnosa. Here's not the right place, not the right audience, they're not interested in you. Why don't you go south where they like to hear about bad nevuahs about our kingdom? Then they'll pay you lots of money, you get on your soapbox, they'll give you parnosa the whole year round, you'll be fine. Which explains Amos' angry response. Amos says, I'm not a Navi. I don't need this for money. I had a job. I had a day job. Everything was fine up till now. I'm doing this because Hashem said I need to give this over. Don't accuse me of doing this for bread. That's what seems to be going on over here. Finally, the last point to think about in this really hair-raising perek is the idea that he tells Amatzia this terrible curse on his family and on himself personally. Now, Barbara Nell points out Amos has been telling or praying for four things for the nation of Israel. Number one is that they're going to be set to, he's telling the nation of Israel to separate themselves from their znus, from idolatry and adultery in their land. And he is praying that the land be saved from raiders. And he's praying that the land be saved from colonization. And he's praying that the land be saved from exile. So what he does is when Amatzia is not willing to let him do what he needs to do, he actually predicts all four of them onto Amatzia personally. He's going to be the example of this. So that's why Ishtachar Ba'ir Tizneh, that his wife is going to adulterate, whether it means idolatry or adultery, in the city. His children will die. His land will be taken over by somebody else, and he will be exiled. So all four steps of what he's trying to pray it shouldn't happen to Israel will happen personally to Amatzia because he's not willing to listen. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.